on me.
Yeah, yeah, have a level.
Have a level.
Well,
hey.
And I do have my belch in there, so we can always start that way.
Hey, welcome to the marathon discussion.
Hi, guys.
We've been down in the basement, tipping back a couple brewskis.
Yeah, we are back for the next marathon chat with Joe Neff.
Yeah.
The master of ceremonies for the 24-hour...
Well, I'm only a co... Or I'm one of the masters of ceremonies.
There's two masters of ceremonies.
Yeah.
Well,
Bruce is still there. And, you know, some of you out there might think Bruce doesn't care because he doesn't appear on these things, but it's actually because he's smart and realizes I'm the dope who will get out and talk and talk and talk and
Bruce
talk.
Bruce is not a young man anymore. He's no longer the Reggie Bannister lookalike with the ponytail that
no.
we knew and loved in the 90s.
We could work on that, though.
Yeah, we could.
We could.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're back. This is, what, episode 3?
Episode 3 of Marathon Chat.
Yeah, and we don't have anything new to talk about, so we're just going to talk about the past.
So there's no movies, no great announcements you can make?
No.
Can you make an announcement? There's been a lot of buzz on the board.
An announcement or a pronouncement?
Or can you hint
someone on the, someone on the board.
Just between you and me.
Someone on the board, yeah. Someone on the board suggested we show It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Which I love.
That
but
was
I,
in response yeah. to somebody suggesting we watch Helly, which involves testicle burning.
That was the L.A. connection, our buddy from the Boston Marathon who lives in L.A. And he likes to prod people. I like to prod people, but he makes me look like I'm Mother Teresa when it comes to
well,
that.
Well, he's just trying. He's trying to top a Serbian film is, I think, what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, he's. I
that
love,
put you in a difficult position because you want to. You
well,
want
I
kids to come.
I love that guy, but at the same time, too, he likes to criticize the marathon with, even though he's never been to Columbus. So he'll say like, "Well, you know, I don't know if this film will go over well," and then I'll tell him, "No, really, it went over well because like, and this is just any film because yeah, the audience liked it," and then he'll conveniently ignore that the next time he talks about it, like trying to analyze it in a broad way as if our audience is nebulous and like every other audience in the world or I.
So there's no chance of showing Helly?
I have no idea. I can tell
is
you.
Is it a sequel to The Night of a Thousand Cats because there's so many helicopters?
Oh, that would
in
be
it?
Awesome. Yeah. no one can see me smiling right now. I'm looking dreamily off into
that's
the.
That's so Stiglitz.
Yeah. Well,
they
here,
should make a sitcom called That's So Stiglitz.
That's So Stiglitz.
And just like, you know, something would happen and it's like, wah, wah, and he'd be standing there in the corner and be like, that's so Stiglitz.
Tuk, 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 tuk. There was a helicopter
yeah,
floating over.
Shoving buddies and all that
yeah.
good stuff.
The only announcement I can tell you is I know that we're going to meet with the brain trust at the Drexel tomorrow,
yep.
and we're recording this on a Tuesday, so to try to get some more balls rolling along.
To get your balls in order.
That I hope, God.
You really put an emphasis on balls, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. No, hope I'm really still I'm still hoping we have more
more films. We only have
more films
six.
Maybe by in a month.
Okay.
Part of it is I'll tell you this. We've wanted to do this for a couple years and it's been hard, but we've wanted to try to make a renewed push to at least get a couple semi-legitimate premieres.
Okay.
You know? I mean, that might be decent.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about it so many times before.
Premieres are so iffy.
And it's tougher to get them now. And especially now when you're planning this event at this point.
Yeah.
The whole summer festival season hasn't started yet. You don't have Fantasia or Fantastic Fest later on. And sometimes things pop up there that you could potentially pursue.
Yeah.
You know about some titles that are coming out in the fall, limited release or small films or things like that. So in part, you have to strike that balance between thinking, okay, how many non-premiere titles do we want to schedule now? So when we make the announcement in August or so, we can put something that looks good out there to sell tickets. And how many spaces do we want to leave? But also realistically, can we actually get anything? You know what I mean? You have to strike that balance thinking, well, we could leave two spots open, but if we can't get anything, we might as well book something that we know we can get right now so we at least can advertise that.
Well, also, I imagine a difficulty is getting these. Like, for example, I was looking online, and apparently The Animal is showing in Columbus right now. I mean, because I looked it up. And
which
one? The one with Joey Lauren Adams. I don't know if it's any good.
I don't know if I know about that.
Predator attacking people in a cabin or something like that. But it's
okay.
I apparently a trailer dropped this week and I was searching for it and it says, hey, you want Showtime's in Columbus? And it's playing at the Studio Grill.
I had no idea.
Tonight. Yeah, as we talk. And that's what's so bizarre about it is Are those titles worth pursuing? Because likely it's going to be on DVD and Blu-ray before. I mean, because we're talking right now, it's June.
Yeah, that's well,
by October.
Here's the experience I can tell you about.
Yeah.
And again, we've probably talked about this before. In 2012, we showed Kill List, the Ben Wheatley film.
Yeah.
Had wanted to show it or had thought about showing it the year before.
Yeah.
Didn't. By the time we showed it, it was out on Blu-ray, DVD, and had played like a limited week-long run in Columbus months beforehand.
Yeah.
And yet most of the audience, when we polled them, had never seen it.
Well, I guess that's and
sometimes
a good question.
Things like that, especially if they sort of fly under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we're in the middle of it and we think none of these things really fly under the radar. But in this town, and sometimes especially for the people we draw, some of whom are from towns in Ohio that that where this stuff won't play, they either don't know about it or they'll wait to see it. And it has somewhat of the same effect as a premiere, even though we're not saying it's a premiere. So we
I guess
used to be a lot more proprietary about it, about that, saying, oh, yeah, we if it's going to be something new like that, it has to be a premiere. But that's
premieres are so
here and there anymore.
Wonky now anyways. But here's the other thing is like something like, say just for sake of argument, The Animal, I'm assuming it's going to be hitting Blu-ray before September because that's kind of how these things roll with these limited release things. But if you were to in fact book it now, say you had it booked, an early announcement and I know it's coming and I'm going to see it on the big screen in October, I'm not going to bother to go rent the Blu-ray.
Yeah, we had that in 2002 when we showed Stuart Gordon's movie Dagon.
Yeah.
And we booked it and announced it, I think, in August, knowing it would hit DVD early October.
Yeah.
But people still really enjoyed it because they knew to wait. So, yeah, I mean, those things, if it seems like it could be okay or fit in well, yeah, we do that.
Or like a movie like I just saw today. This morning I went and saw The Signal.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name? William Eubank, I think, is who directed it.
I think so.
Something like that. Nobody knows this movie's in Columbus right now.
Mm-hmm.
It opened in 120 theaters this past Friday. Columbus, Lenox happened to be one of them. They purposely didn't do a press screening.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know why. Because nobody knows this. Everyone was like, 22 Jump Street, How to Train Your Dragon. So even though you can sit there and say, well, Signal's here, and it's likely going to play another week because they're doing a nationwide expansion this week, but again, nobody knows about it. It's Focus Features with their thumb somewhere, not realizing that you actually need
in
to
their
promote
ear.
These movies, or everyone just thinks that it's 22 Jump Street and How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
So most people are not going to have seen The Signal. You could show that at a sci-fi marathon, but you're running into...
I'll give you another example, too, is Under the Skin.
Yeah.
The Jonathan Glazer movie. Yeah. I went and saw that at Gateway, and that played for... That ended up playing, I think, for about 3 weeks off and on.
At least they screened that one.
Yeah.
They did. A24 screened it. Good for them.
And but that's something where I bet if we... Say if we wanted to show that for sci-fi next year.
Yeah.
Potentially, maybe we could.
Nude Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. I bet if we polled the audience, most people would not have seen that because they didn't know it played in Columbus or they didn't really hear about it that much, even though like it was on the cover of Fangoria.
Yeah.
Even with that, films like that sometimes don't always resonate as much as you'd think.
And it was
especially
also,
here, and it's not, I don't want to.
Was it a Gateway exclusive? Because it was at the Gateway.
I think it was, yeah.
Whether it was a Gateway or not exclusive, it was heavily promoted at the Gateway, not much outside.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so the crowd that would focus on the Gateway would know that.
Yeah,
but maybe not everybody else, especially even the people out from outside of town.
Yeah, and I think part of it's living in Columbus, and that's not condescending.
Yeah,
it just is. If we were in LA and we said we're going to show Under the Skin at our marathon in 6 months, maybe the audience there would say, "Well, we've seen that."
Yeah.
So who cares? Or oh well, there you go. But part of it too is it's the fragmentation of culture. You're right. I mean, the films like that get made and they exist and a lot of them make their money back, but they don't get talked about as much because everything's fragmented in so many directions.
And there's some really amazing, I haven't seen too many horror releases lately, like the wide ones, but there were some from last year, like Haunter. That was pretty good. You know, Haunter.
I didn't see Haunter. I saw that I think would be cool, and I don't know if it would fit with the lineup we have now, but I wouldn't rule it out, was Here Comes the Devil. Did you see that? The Mexican possessed child
No, I
didn't feature.
That one, no.
Very like low-key, slow-burn, creepy. Two parents go out to a... Where are they? Two parents go out in Mexico, have a son and a daughter. Two parents go out. Yeah. They have a date. 9 months later, kids are born. Yeah. And then the movie ends and the kids live. Two parents go out with their kids and they're stopped at like out in the country and they're stopped at a gas station. And the parents let the kids go off to like wander up on some of the hills that are by the gas station.
Because they're terrible parents.
Well, while the parents get it on in the car. Because they're like,
I wouldn't give that a go.
And the kids go in a cave, and when they come back, they seem different. And that's just the first 10 minutes. And
so it came from outer space.
Kind of like that, yeah. Yeah, except it's got a snazzier title. but it's based on a real life area of Mexico that has long been rumored to be a haven for demonic possession or demonic hauntings.
You know, I think I saw that in the Fodor's travelogue of places you never want to go.
It is. It's the first place actually.
Yeah.
But something like that.
Places not to take your kids.
Something like that. Like, that played in town again for maybe a week.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing if we played that this year, if we advertised it, a lot of people would say, oh.
Yeah,
and that was on the cover of, Rue Morgue magazine, and that got a decent amount of coverage in the fan press.
Well, and it's not just not just existing. It has to be availability.
That is very true.
And that's why I'm saying sometimes even if there's something that is out on DVD, if you make that announcement, I think people would respond well to that. So.
Well, I have something special for you.
Oh,
today.
Yes. What do we have? Yeah.
So we're recording this podcast on Tuesday, the
17th. The birthday of my son.
The Ben Carr's birthday. And Ben is sitting here we're literally in the nerve center of the studio in the sky here in Fat Guy Central. Yeah. Kevin's motioning
Ben
over.
Hi, Ben.
He went to the sci-fi marathon this year. And did you have fun?
Yes, I had so much fun. Yes, I had very much fun.
Okay. You can almost
yes,
see
I had very
you,
much fun.
You can
fun.
Almost believe he's not reading off a script.
It was better than Cats.
Thank you, Dad. You are awesome. I love you. Please give me food.
Yes.
Ben's a ripe old 11, you said today, right?
Yes, 11
years old. Ben's been through a lot for an 11-year-old. You can see the hollowed-out eyes.
Okay.
He's just breathing heavily into it now. Right. So here on the 17th, on Ben's birthday, we are merely days removed from the death of radio legend Casey Kasem.
That's right.
And so,
which is kind of a horror story in itself.
It is.
That ending, yeah.
And I just wanted everybody out there to know that his legacy lives on because today, in fact, I received this letter.
Theater of the Mind.
Theater of the Mind sound effects. I received this letter from a special person, and I'd like to read it now.
Sure.
In tribute to our fallen radio friend. Mm. And this letter goes, Dear Joe, I've been a loyal marathoid since 1998. These biannual events fill a hole in my soul like cheap candy and coffee never could. 3 years ago, while sitting near the back of the theater, I suddenly locked eyes with a man who would become the love of my life. I don't know what drew me to him more, the half-eaten milk duds dangling from his lips, or the trickle of sweat dripping down from his bald pate. But at that magic moment, we both knew that the mediator between our hearts and minds had to be our hearts. That magical night we sat together and watched the film that would cement our budding love. The name of that cinematic epic? A Serbian Film. How more couples don't bond over this movie, I don't know. I can't thank you enough, Joe, for bestowing us with such a romantic experience. 6 months ago, my husband was deployed to Berlin to paint chicken coops. Why? I don't know. But my heart goes out to him. Joe, could you send out this dedication to my Vukmir Vukmir loving marathon mate? Sincerely, Miranda. Well, Miranda, never let it be said that we don't respect great marathon fans, let alone hardcore fans of Serbian Film. So to Miranda's marathon mate, this podcast is dedicated to you. And just remember, keep your feet in the grave and keep reaching for the scars. Thank you.
I feel like we should play like all by myself or something like that.
Can we please not come out of a goddamn up-tempo song when I'm trying to dedicate this to a goddamn man stationed a dead dog? Yeah. That was a little...
Wow.
Sorry. That was a little call back to the infamous
KCT case,
infamous
and blooper.
KCT tape, yeah, the blooper.
Not
tape.
Not really a blooper.
No,
it was a rant.
It was, I believe, the term is case him uncut, case him raw. Yeah. So there you go. Here's to you, Casey,
you
wherever you are.
Casem'd.
And this podcast has nothing to do with Casey Kasem or Serbian film, so there we go, too.
Well, no, it's going to have something to do with the Serbian film.
Yeah,
we're talk
does.
About a Serbian film.
No, we're talking about... Okay, so this was Kevin's idea.
Well, thank you for
when
the...
Kevin proposed this, not the letter. The
See, no, I'm not playing matchmaker over Serbian film, please.
Miranda, we still love you. Kevin's idea when he proposed this multi-part... epic lead up to this fall's horror marathon, which, by the way, if you're listening to this for the first time, shock around the clock, the 666th annual Ohio 24-hour horror marathon, noon, Saturday, October 18th. Oh, wait, I should do this as Casey Kasem.
Okay.
The 666th Ohio 24-hour horror marathon, noon, October 18th to noon, October 19th, that's Saturday and Sunday, at the Drexel Theater in Bexley, here in beautiful Columbus, Ohio. It's sure to be a fantabulous time. Romance, intrigue, milk duds. Yeah, so that's when it's happening. If you want more information...
There's a little bit of Wolfman Jack in there.
A little more... Hey, Daddy, here we go. www.horrormarathon.com. Yeah.
Where are people still arguing about what should be next in line?
Next in line?
Well, they're talking about what else should be on the lineup.
Oh.
Have you seen some of these suggestions?
I have.
Obviously, Hilo. Heli?
Yeah.
Serbian film.
What was it? There was something I thought was actually pretty good. It was. Oh, someone mentioned Shaun of the Dead has never shown, and they are correct.
That's true.
Not yet. Although it will someday. Mm-hmm. Trust me. If not this year, it will soon.
Have you shown any
Edgar Wright
movies?
No. Oh. No. There, I still want to go back and do another zombie theme marathon sometime in the near future because it's been so long and that's such a fertile ground. And that would be great, and Zombieland would be great, and there's a ton of other stuff. But what are some of the other? You have the suggestions.
Oh, there's, well, I'm just looking at the more recent ones like Rawhead Rex and the ones I like, Maximum Overdrive. I was
Maximum
pitching
Overdrive,
to you earlier.
Yeah.
That's an incredibly terrible.
Because we're going to scare the hell out of the audience.
So, I want to scare the hell out of you. That guy behind the camera, because I'm not really pointing at
Big
game.
Steve, yeah. Well, now that Big Steve and I have settled our Twitter feud.
This is true.
Maybe he'll let us show it, because you might not know it, but Big Steve has the only print of Maximum Overdrive in the world.
Is that true?
In the universe.
Is that actually true?
It is if I say
does,
it, right?
I mean, does anyone... I mean, that's my question.
I'm going to proclaim that right now. Big Steve has the only print of Maximum Overdrive in the universe.
Or does
who's going to prove me wrong, huh?
It gets
huh?
covered in cocaine.
he ruefully looks at it sometimes in his back room and says, oh, the old days.
I had recently watched Maximum Overdrive because it's on streaming now.
Yeah.
And I put on Twitter that I said, oh, I'm watching this, the movie that Stephen King directed. And my friend of mine goes, cocaine directed. And what's so amazing about it is Stephen King has come out and said that is his worst movie.
He called it a moron movie.
Yeah. Well, he always said he did like fast food and moron movies. But he said it was the worst adaptation of his stuff ever. And which is so funny to then go back and watch a trailer. He goes, I wanted to do it right.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked it.
A lot of people have tried to adapt my books.
And I get it. Okay. You know, cocaine. And I get it. You're on a shooting schedule. I've been on film sets. It's nuts. It's crazy. It's high stress. But in the like 6 to 9 months after, during post-production, was there not at least one day he wasn't coked out of his mind that he watches and goes, this thing's a load of shit?
Well, think about it. It's Dino De Laurentiis coming to a guy who's an author who's never directed a movie, probably never really done a whole lot of work on a film set outside of the stuff he did with Romero for Creepshow.
Yeah.
And says, hey, go direct a movie with a crew that doesn't speak English.
Yep.
I mean, what are you going to get? You know, it really is, you know. It really is like making chicken salad from chicken shit.
Well,
what do you do? I mean, you can edit it as much as you want.
The movie's
like,
bad.
This
but
is
I mean,
bad.
The script is bad. That's the problem. It's like, I read it for the screen. You're like, what? There's lines in that movie that are amazing.
Hey, he never made another movie.
The
he
girl walks
lesson.
Up to Emilio Estevez and goes, you're cute. Oh, I keep, you know, she thinks I'm cute was a better written line from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Then I don't know. I'm getting down on it, but it would go over great.
You're probably going to get into another Twitter feud with Big Steve now.
Big
He's out
Steve.
There.
Big Steve scared of me.
By the way, for those of you who don't know, by the way, Big Steve, the reason I say that is because way back in the day, back around the time Maximum Overdrive came out, the legendary Joe Bob Briggs, former Marathon guest, he would write about Stephen King's films in his column, and he would call Stephen King Big Steve.
Yeah.
In character as Joe Bob. And actually, they had a, what did they have? They had like a drive-in, a mini drive-in festival in Dallas, Texas back in like 83 or 84.
Wow.
And Joe Bob handed out the Hubbies, which are the Hubcap Awards for the best drive-in films of the year. And apparently Stephen King showed up to it.
Wow.
Like he asked him to come out. And they'd known each other for a while. And so he would always refer to him as Big Steve. And so when I'm younger, I'm reading these reprints of the Joe Bob columns in book form.
Yeah.
And it just stuck. And now every time I think of Stephen King, I think of him as Big Steve.
Big Steve.
And someday he's probably going to meet me and say, hey, by the way, the name's not Big Steve.
Fuck
okay?
you. That's what he'll say.
So here you call me Big Steve. You know, no one calls him Big Steve except for me and Joe Bob. So
he'd always
back off, kid.
In the introduction to Skeleton Crew, he talks about a friend who was giving him shit for one of his stories he published and would call him Steve-O.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's trademarked now from Steve-O.
Jackass.
The shit-eating crazy man.
Yeah. And then Big Steve looked at his friend and said, hold on for a second, and went and bathed in his millions of dollars and came back and
he
said,
went Scrooge McDuck.
Says, what were you saying?
I was too busy wiping my ass with gold bullion.
Yeah. Must be a tough life.
Yeah.
Must be a real tough life. How is the secret sub-theme of these podcasts imaginary feuds with Stephen King?
It started weeks ago for a show I didn't even watch.
This is like this. I like to think this will be like the what was it? The Chad Smith or the Will Ferrell challenging Chad Smith to a drum off.
Don't even.
Where
no.
I recently realized
it's Jimmy Kimmel
thing. You hate Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah. I hate both Jimmys. Fuck them both, man. Dry them out and use them as kindling. You can sell them at Home Depot because I hate both of them.
I wasn't passing judgment on the quality of it. I just said
nothing comes out of those. Nothing.
Why?
I hate them. I tell you.
Why are you? What did Jimmy Fallon do to you?
He's terrible.
Okay.
He exists.
He exists.
That's it.
I think he's more of a benign presence.
He's just kind of like a tumor.
Wow. So wait.
No, what? I would still cut him out.
I'm trying to think. Okay. All right.
Throw him in a medical waste and then incinerate him.
I'm not saying I love what Jimmy Fallon does, but I like Will Ferrell.
And I like
Chad Smith.
And Will Ferrell's a great. He's hilarious.
So maybe I should go to Jimmy Fallon and say, hey, I'm some obscure guy from the Midwest, and I've challenged Stephen King to a feud.
There you go.
You should have us on.
I still won't watch it.
And it would be like the old days of The Tonight Show, because you have someone who's famous and then an obscure no-name from the middle of nowhere. You know, Carson would be proud. Come on. He's probably wherever he is saying, yeah, it would be great.
I respect Carson.
I just didn't realize. And you'd be...
The Tonight Show has just turned into... It just don't... Oh, Jesus Christ, no.
Do you like any late-night hosts?
I like Conan. Conan's
okay.
great.
Okay, yeah, Conan was great. I love Conan.
Conan's great. I like Conan. I like Jay Leno until he became an ass. I mean, he was always kind of an ass, but...
Yeah.
Until he's like, I'm going to have my own show. No, I'm not. I want that show, the show back.
I'm going to stick around.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave, but you know...
I don't have enough...
I would feel bad about going to another network and starting a show, so I'm just going to hang around in the back room and poison the well.
Letterman was fine. I like Letterman.
I've always liked Letterman. Well, Letterman is the father of most of these guys.
And Jimmy Kimmel? Fuck Jimmy Kimmel.
Why don't you like Jimmy Kimmel?
Because he's an asshole.
Yeah?
I mean, he's
and?
Just... Because he is.
And? I don't know what to tell you.
I've never liked Jimmy Kimmel.
So Conan, apparently...
Conan's funny.
Is not an asshole.
You know, this is where I started hating Jimmy Kimmel, is because of these little things where he goes, go tell your kids that you ate all their Halloween candy. Be an asshole to your kids, videotape it, and then we'll all laugh at it.
Oh, no. You know what? Oh, wow. This is all becoming clear to me now. This is the classic syndrome. It's, trust me, when you have kids, you'll understand.
I have kids.
This is where you've fallen into this, haven't you? It's like, before I had kids, I would have loved Jimmy Kimmel, but now that I have kids... You just don't get it. You don't have kids.
No,
this isn't it. Yeah.
This is actually why I don't like that Jimmy Kimmel nonsense. Is because then you see the kid and they tell the kid, I ate all your Halloween candy. And the kid like picks up a table and like crushes his hamster with it and rips a hole in the wall and starts threatening people's lives. And everyone's like, that's hilarious. And I'm like, first of all, those parents have raised a hellion of a child. And that's what that kid's going to get to when he's disappointed and upset. That's not funny.
I wish we videotaped this.
Those are the people who go and murder people later on.
I wish we videotaped this because you could see Kevin waving his finger, literally waving his finger at imaginary Jimmy Kimmel for corrupting children and abusing them.
No, it's not that they corrupt it. It reveals how awful these people are.
Yeah.
And then people are like, oh, ha, it's hilarious. And then they want to do it for their own kid. And I'm like, because if I did it to my kids would just be upset and they'd probably cry.
Can I let you?
Because they're good kids.
Can I let you in on a secret?
Yes, tell me your.
I don't watch that much of any of these guys. Usually, if I fall asleep, I turn it on Letterman. Although more often than not, I watch Keith Olbermann's ESPN Sports recap. So, Kimmel, I've seen a handful of times.
Yeah, there's not.
I did enjoy Kimmel's takedown of Leno when the whole Conan thing was going on. That was fun. What that was bad too. What was that?
I don't know because it's Kimmel. I hate him and his stupid face.
There's
about Jimmy Kimmel that like a bathtub of concentrated sulfuric acid wouldn't take care
of. We were going to talk about Marathon Shorts today, but I think we should just analyze your hatred of Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon.
You know, I think he would, you know what? You could probably drain the blood from his body and give it to dying like victims of a car crash.
Yeah.
And he would have a more positive impact on the world.
I can't believe I'm defending these guys because I really don't care. All I'll say for Jimmy Fallon,
I think of
because
Kimmel,
I've seen
what you think about Twitter.
I've seen a handful. Yeah, Jimmy Fallon. Yeah, this is a really good analogy section. Hey kids, on your next SAT, remember this. You can probably write this in the margins and impress them.
That's right.
SAT like, scores will be like,
who are these people?
What is this? All right, whatever. The only thing I'll say in defense of Jimmy Fallon, even though I don't really care that much, I really did not like Leno after the whole Conan thing, and I never liked him that much before because I agree with the standard criticism. He just became this milquetoast, very bland.
Yeah.
For a guy who like really had it for a long time back in the day.
He was banging Sandra Bernhardt.
He just became
You have to be edgy to manage that.
Well, he became so focused on the workmanlike business of doing the show that I think it became boring, and that became, and it's dumb and reductive, and I know it's stupid, and it's a dumb cultural meme to say like, oh, people who are into Leno were like boring and old, and people who are into Letterman were edgy and old, or I don't know, whatever. But here's what I'll say about Fallon at least. He seems like he's a genuinely decent guy who just kind of likes having fun, and likes like, hey, let's have like a party atmosphere. Does that mean that the show necessarily is great? I don't know about that. Does that mean I find it a little more interesting than what Leno did? Because what Leno did to me was so, like, bland and obsequious and fawning. I know. I mean, the knock on Fallon is that he's just like he'd never say anything semi-controversial. I recently heard the Shailene Woodley story. Have you heard that?
No, because I anything that comes up as Fallon or Kimmel, I just immediately delete off my feed.
Oh, it could literally
be the president could go on the show and then say we are going to be bombing France tomorrow. I would not get that news.
I'd like to,
because I would delete that off.
I would like to make another public service announcement right now.
Okay,
these are the detrimental effects of Twitter, because these stories exist outside of Twitter, and yet you're saying if it's on
Facebook, actually, is
where
I see it.
Or Facebook, okay. Or Facebook. Sure, Facebook too. Hey, Zuckerberg, I'm coming for you too. Okay? Because I can take you. All right, and I'll bring Jesse Eisenberg with me, and we'll both take you down and then say something smarmy. So, the Shailene Woodley story,
okay,
which I only heard this week, New York Magazine, I guess, reported on it, is she was on there to promote Fault in Our Stars.
Oh, Jesus. God,
and Fallon asked her about, what was he saying? He said something like, what do you think when people compare you to Jennifer Lawrence? And Shailene Woodley went on this
comparing a Big Mac to a steak?
She went on this smite. Trick number one, lookest thou that way, madest thou look. I don't know. God, I'm now riffing off of Geico commercials.
What does the world come to?
We are going to talk about Marathon Shorts, by
Final
the way.
Thing with Jimmy Fallon, you've seen Being There, right?
No, I haven't even finished. Okay, are you going to continue?
Final thing, there was a story. Jimmy Fallon finished.
So Shailene Woodley,
I thought that was the joke. I just didn't get to.
No. That was just... Shailene Woodley in response said, "Lookest thou over there, mayest thou look, Geico."
I just laugh. It's like when somebody says something, you don't understand what they say, you just smile, you're like, oh, that's great, let's move on.
So he says, "What do you think about people comparing you to Jennifer Lawrence?" And I guess she went off on this small but pointed tangent saying, "I hate when..." Something like, "I hate when critics and when the public does that to us as women," like saying something like, you know, "You're just reducing us down to, well, are you like Jennifer Lawrence?" And it's like, well, why can't we just be judged as individual people and not as, well, you as a female star, how are you?
Who's patterning your career exactly? It's always patterned after
another
Jennifer
female
Lawrence.
Star. Yeah. And
she's patterning her career exactly after.
Well,
Jennifer.
And it was, but it was a very,
it's a very fair question in Fallon's defense.
But it was a fairly short answer it was interesting.
Okay.
And it was like, it was kind of an interesting commentary on how women are judged, you know?
Yeah, I think guys are judged, but
agree or disagree with it. It was still an interesting point. And the producers cut that bit out of the show.
Really?
Because I guess they thought that was too controversial or like that didn't fit the party atmosphere of the show. And I guess if that's what you want, that's what you want. I get that. I don't.
No, I agree. I think Fallon's there to just have fun.
Yeah, and that's fun. To me, it's like, if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. I don't think that's detrimental in some way.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, you know, to me, trying to watch Leno in the later years was kind of soul-sucking. It was like, God, I don't see how people can enjoy this. It's just so.
See, I never watched Leno for years. I watched Conan a lot when Ben was born, who we're talking about, because, you know, when you have a baby, it's. And Ben was born in 2003, so that was before I had like a DVR all set up.
And Conan is not necessarily an edgy interviewer, but Conan's humor is so based in that Harvard-educated absurdity that it's fun, but it's fun in like a really intellectual way.
Everyone has to have their shtick, and Leno's shtick was to be as milquetoast as you could.
Yeah,
Conan has that Simpson writer, ex-Simpson writer sort of bizarreness to him.
And yeah.
I look at Fallon and Kimmel just as I'm going to be the asshole frat kid that wasn't in a frat, who was just the asshole who like threw water balloons at people.
This is so
psych.
Oh, you're talking about Kimmel.
That's
I'm sorry.
Kimmel.
I thought that was you saying that's who you were going to be.
No, I would do that
if
to
you
Kimmel.
Want to.
I would. Can you get Kimmel and I'll throw water balloons filled with urine at him and maybe a couple with some.
Can you name this episode of the podcast "Die Jimmy Kimmel Die"?
I will. I would love to.
Urine balloons and Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Fallon, I look at as the guy from Being There, the Peter Sellers character from Being There, where he's just
Chauncey Gardner. Yeah,
he's just a complete idiot. who's a complete he's as simple as can be, and he just kind of stumbles into things, and people think what he does
is
brilliant,
profound and brilliant. Yeah,
but it really isn't. It's just him saying there's a I forget some lines from his.
Well, you know, ultimately, there is ambiguity in that film about Chauncey Gardner's profundity. That maybe there is some profundity. Ultimately,
well, there's no profundity to Jimmy Fallon.
You know what? I think I should email Nikki Fink and have her get on Twitter and say her next tweet should say Kevin Carr quote. Jimmy Fallon equals Chauncey Gardner, end quote.
Jimmy.
And then you and Jimmy Fallon compute. And then Kimmel can step in too, and Nikki Fink can referee. And
she is like the worst person. She's like the worst person in Hollywood, and that's Hollywood. With like rapists and murderers. And like Nikki Fink's the worst.
Man, usually I'm the one who steps in it, but today
I'm not stepping in it.
You're shooting.
Whoa, it's going to come back and bite me that I said Nikki Fink is a horrible person.
So guys in like the Midwest, they do they've been doing a podcast and they just like declare jihad on various celebrities. I guess it's kind of entertaining. I don't know.
I guess if I don't know. If I had
Nikki Fink and Stephen King, Jimmy Kimmel too.
Nah,
Jimmy
King.
Fallon, let's go rumble.
Stephen King can
we
just
all
be
hate you too.
A doofus sometimes, but like Nikki Fink, like I don't know. If I had like, you know, the carnival setup with the dunking booth, the first one I'd want to put in over the vat of hydrochloric acid would be Nikki Fink. And then quickly followed by Jimmy Kimmel. I wouldn't even clean that out. He'd have to dissolve in Nikki Fink's residue. And, you know, I don't know. I maybe would just dunk Jimmy Fallon in water. I mean, I don't like Jimmy Fallon, but I guess I wouldn't. I don't want him to physically. I don't want him to re. Like the others, I wouldn't mind having them recreate all the scenes from a Serbian film from the worst angle possible.
Oh.
You know.
Wow.
Chopping off the head.
How about Craig Ferguson?
He's okay.
Yeah, I like him, actually.
No, and that's the thing, because suddenly, like, the two worst people to do a late night show kind of ascended to the top spots.
Ben, I'm looking at Ben right now. He's across from him. Ben, does your dad sometimes go on this rant to you? Does he kind of set you up in my place and say, hey, Ben, let's quote-unquote tape a podcast? And then he just goes off about late night hosts.
I've been ranting for like 45 minutes about these. What are we talking about?
We're talking about, okay, I think about an hour ago or so, I said, hey, so Kevin proposed this idea a couple months ago that we should do a podcast every month to promote the Horror Marathon. And the first two, we'd break up and talk about the three or the six films we had so far. But the third one, he said, we should talk about marathon shorts, like short subjects. And
not what people wear that are inappropriate to the marathon.
I have worn shorts to the marathon many years ago, and they were comfortable, but they get cold. So, yeah, shorts that have played at the marathon. And I even said, hey, we should expand it out to maybe some trailers or things like that, because – surprisingly enough,
there's not enough to talk about. There are
good stories to tell about shorts. Yeah, someone's going to be listening to this and saying, you know, once they got onto the whole like Nikki Fink, Jimmy Fallon thing, it's like, why do I want to listen to that? There's no Nikki Fink at the marathon.
Thank God.
But Jimmy Fallon will be appearing at the marathon. He's going to stop by and do a cute skit and then leave. And everybody will say, wow, that's so viral.
So let's talk about the shorts.
Shorts. Okay, so shorts in the history of the marathon. And I think I assembled the list.
These are not just ones that are going to be playing at the Horror Marathon, because there's enough traditional ones that go to each one.
Yeah, and I'm probably forgetting some of these. But and you can fill in the blanks if you remember. And Bruce is probably at home grinding his teeth, or when he hears this, he probably will be, because he probably remembers something I don't. But to me, the pantheon, the upper level, the top tier of marathon shorts, the things that have lasted in one way or another for years and years and years.
The greats.
First up, of course, and I don't know that there's that much to say about this because it's pretty self-explanatory, is Duck Dodgers the 24th and a half century.
That hasn't started every sci-fi marathon, but it's done most of them, right? Has it done all of them?
Not sure. For a long time, it has. I don't remember if it always started the sci-fi marathon. But my memory's a little hazy. Bruce would know better about that. No. I mean, I'm willing to bet it's played at almost every sci-fi marathon. No. But it's been quite a while that it started. I don't know if it's from the beginning or not, but I think for as long as I've been going up to the Boston sci-fi marathons, they've always started off the marathon with that. And Columbus has for a really long time now, too.
What I find interesting about the Duck Dodgers, it's a great way to open.
Yeah.
Brilliant, classic movie. Is that your phone?
No. There's a buzzing sound for those of you who can't hear.
Oh, there's a buzzing. Okay. All right. That might have been my son's phone.
So this is dead air.
Oh, sorry. Anyways, Duck Dodgers, great way to start a marathon, great energy. What's so kind of amazing about the marathon crowd for this one is, of course, everyone gets into yelling, Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a half century. But they also will quote throughout, not every single line.
Yeah.
But what's kind of amazing is it's played so many times that it's almost like watching Rocky Horror. If you've ever watched Rocky Horror with like groups from different areas get together, it's kind of a mess because people aren't timed out right.
Yeah.
You know, they have the callbacks just slightly off from each other. So something happens and you hear this you don't understand what's being said. But you go to a place where they've done Rocky Horror every week for 5 years, everyone just boom is on. And that's the way it is watching Duck Dodgers, because what happens? You watch Duck Dodgers and people will quote in tandem with the beat of this language.
Yeah.
And when it disintegrates. It disintegrates, and the pauses are exactly right there.
Yeah,
and they do the Porky Pig stuttering when he replies to Duck Dodgers, and here, happy birthday, you, thing from another world, you, all that kind of stuff. That's what I find is amazing about the crowd is over the years, they actually, for the most part, are pretty close to the script.
Yeah. And it's so weird. Like, that has played so much that I go through the experience of, like, when I first saw it, it was great. And then after a while, it's like, okay, I've seen this.
Yeah.
And I mean, you see it a bunch when you're a kid, too, or at least when we were kids.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. And then I reached a period where I thought, oh, yeah, you know what? I'm really appreciating things about this I didn't before. Now I'm kind of back into like, oh, good, it's Duck Dodgers, but it's like I could walk outside and back and come back in during this if
you
I needed
need
to.
You don't need to see it. It's tradition. Yeah.
Part of it, too, is in Boston, at the beginning of their sci-fi, they hand out free atomic fireballs to everybody who walks
in. They used to do that.
They used to do it in Columbus, Well, budget cuts in the Midwest have kind of taken back on that, okay?
You could spend the $3 at the Dollar Tree.
No, it's that $3 could go to a lot more worthy causes, okay? we should, because I think that dynamic is interesting, because when you have an atomic fireball in your mouth dissolving while watching it,
it makes it hard to yell those lines.
It does, and it keeps you up on what's going on because you're in slight physical discomfort.
By the time you're done counting down from 30, 31, 32, you need something to suck on.
You do.
What?
What?
Jimmy Fallon would have laughed.
Jimmy Fallon would have, he'll make a skit about that soon, starring a celebrity who's looking for free plugs or hair plugs.
What?
So Duck Dodgers, big, kind of taken on itself, blah, blah, blah. Now, okay, you talk about audience participation, though, and these are the ones that have, well, at least these next two have evolved over the years, but they are known for what the audience brought to it. First up, keeping in the sci-fi vein, is, of course, David Wechter and Michael Nankin's legendary 50s educational film parody, Gravity.
Gravity. And we are lucky enough to have our own Jiminy Gravity.
That's
here in the studio, Magical Studio in the Sky.
So for those of you out there who don't know what gravity is, I don't know what's wrong.
Jump
with,
off your roof.
I don't know what's wrong
You'll
with you.
You'll figure it out.
Yeah. Don't buy a ticket this year, please. Just go home. Gravity, for those of you who don't know what it is directed by David Wechter and Michael Nankin. David Wechter's father, I believe it was Julius Wechter, who was a semi-famous, I'm going to mess this up, Latin jazz player. In fact, Julius Wechter does music for Gravity. Yeah. Wechter and Nankin, you might know them from the movie Midnight Madness. One of the It's a Mad, 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 Mad World takeoffs from the early 80s that had like Eddie Deason and a cast of teen characters. And they were all looking for, they were on like a treasure hunt.
I hadn't seen that.
Wechter and Nankin directed that. One of the two. Wechter or Nankin wrote one of the original drafts of The Faculty. Robert Rodriguez film. And I think they don't receive a full credit in the end, but they got paid.
Kevin Williamson kind of
Kevin
got
Williamson
for that
like
one, right?
Like yeah, polished that off. And they still do some other things too. In fact, they just did there was a Blu-ray release of, was it Midnight Madness or was it something else? There's another film from the 80s, and the fans of it are probably listening to this saying, "Know your stuff, Joe." But Gravity was included on that. In fact, I think that's where we pulled the version that we played at the marathon finally that looked fairly nice. But Gravity is this short film they made back in the late 70s, and it's a parody of 50s educational films, and it's about this little girl named Mary Jane who wonders why the sun sets. And she asks each member of her family, why does the sun set? And none of them can tell her, and they keep passing her off to the next member of her family, and eventually she has to go to the Carl Lafong Institute for Gravitational Research.
You skipped the titties.
Oh, well, we're getting... Okay. Now, come on, there's a method to the madness. What are you doing? This is called bearing lead. This is...
Boiler.
Yeah, God.
Well, you
amateurs.
You are
like the Jimmy Fallon of podcasts. No, you're like the Jimmy Kimmel of podcasts.
Boobies.
Now.
Go on.
So anyway, yeah. Boy, I shamed him, didn't
Boobies.
I? He's crying now, yeah.
I'm going to go look up, naked pictures.
You're
going to
beep that out in the final cut of this podcast. No. You're the boop of
way too lazy to do
podcasts.
That.
Podcasts. So, ends up at the Carl Lafong Institute for Gravitational Research, talking to Dr. Thornton Waxman, and he tells her that the reason the sun sets is because of gravity.
That's not true.
The gravity pulls it down, and we're encountering a gravity shortage.
Says it's gravity.
Boy, that's what I get for calling you the Jimmy Kimmel of podcasts.
I completely screwed you up. Tits will do that.
They will. I found that. Her teacher tells her that gravity causes the sun to set. Then she goes to the Carl Lafong Institute for Gravitational Research, and that's when Thornton Waxman tells her that there is a gravity shortage.
Yes.
And if we don't watch out, things will begin floating up into the air, and you can help. And then they cut to a short animated film starring Jiminy Gravity singing the Gravity Shortage song. And then at the end, everything's happy. So that's the short. Now, why, you ask, is this in the Pantheon? No, well, in part, it's kind of humorous and, you know, it's short, doesn't overstay its welcome. And especially for its time, I don't know if it was one of the first, but at least in marathon history, it was one of the first and best parodies of that genre,
yeah,
which have since become ubiquitous. And it's kind of funny. And the Jiminy Gravity song is kind of goofy, and it's actually a decent song. But the thing that really drew the marathon crowd in, because we know what that crowd is like, was the third person who Mary Jane goes to talk to, because she goes to talk to her dad, and dad says, I don't know, why don't you go talk to your mother? She goes to talk to her mother, and mother says, I don't know, dear, why don't you go ask your big sister? Mm-hmm. And at this point, Mary Jane goes to Big Sister's room, opens the door, and you cut from Mary Jane's face opening the door to what she, quote-unquote, sees, which the actress didn't actually see it. Obviously, yes. She was a kid. And what she sees is her sister, her big sister, in bed, with holding on to the bedposts, nude, at least from the waist up.
I'm assuming from the waist down, too.
Because
the character's definitely.
Because underneath the covers that cover her from the waist down are 2 feet, which are assumed to be her boyfriend, giving her oral pleasure, as they would say.
As you're being so delicate. To put it this way, if she had asked the boyfriend, his response would be...
Yeah.
So there.
And the narrator of the short of Gravity says, but her big sister didn't know, was too busy, something like that. So she went to ask her grandma instead. So obviously, this coming out of like, you know...
And then, woo, grandma, yeah, she was hot.
And grandma's dead. So 2 minutes into the short, having this turn from, oh, it's a 50s educational parody, to there's Big Sister getting head and there's nudity. And then after that, going just back to what is essentially kind of a parody of 50s shorts with only mild sexual innuendo.
Yeah.
It's kind of a jarring, oddball moment. And that's what made it a huge film for the marathon crowd. And they love it. I remember my first marathon I went to, the 93 Sci-Fi Marathon, a couple films in, people would be yelling during the intermissions. They'd be yelling, Big Sister! Yeah. Big Sister! And my friends and I asked someone next to us, who's Big Sister? And they just said, well, just wait. And of course they showed it, and the crowd goes nuts during that scene, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So the story of Gravity begins with that. Well, then, over the years, the marathon would always get their print of Gravity. It was an old 16mm print. And there were like, I don't know, 3 or 4 prints of this that would circulate. But the problem is, you would get Prince of Gravity sometimes that had the Big Sister 45 seconds cut out. Now,
yes,
this is not a huge surprise because projectionists oftentimes would cut out lurid material to keep for their personal collections.
Nazis.
And after a while, like near the end of the Drexel North days and then into the Rife Center days, it would become a guessing game as to whether the Big Sister content was in there.
If I was recalled, there was... More often than not, it was in there.
More often than not, it was in there. But I think in the last, 95, 96, 97, it became kind of touch and go. Because I clearly remember in 97...
Oh, the first time they didn't have it? Oh, there was almost a riot.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, people were pissed.
Now, here's the interesting thing when you think back, and I don't know the story behind this, but you would
but
think...
But didn't Bruce just own a print of that?
Well, eventually.
Yeah.
Here's what happened. And I don't know if maybe Bruce has the story behind this, or maybe the print of Gravity always came in at the last minute, so they couldn't check it. But I would think you'd just check it and see if it's in there and not show it if it's not. But it came to the point where there were a few years where it was touch and go. And then in 1997 at the Rife Center, Bruce is sitting in the audience watching it with a cordless mic. And it shows, and the Big Sister footage is cut out. And the crowd just goes, oh! And one of my good friends who started going to the marathons with me and who has a very deep, loud voice, right after the crowd goes, oh, my friend goes, fucking Republicans!
Jesus.
Which is great. And that's like, yeah, that's my buddy, yeah.
I was there when they showed up the first time. I can't remember what it was. But she was inducted. Big Sister was inducted in the Hall of Fame in 1991 at the... I'm looking at... the Hall of Marathoid here.
Hall of Marathonia by our good friend, Mr. Zucchini.
And the 5th annual 24-hour sci-fi marathon in 1991, she was inducted. So she'd been famous. I started going at the 3rd annual sci-fi. And I don't know whether it was the third or the fourth that she first showed up.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when it first was showed. And the reaction was just pretty amazing. Because, like you said, you don't know what you get. Oh, it's a comedy. It's a parody. What? And then you're waiting for more. You know, you're like, wait, is it going to get more extreme? But no, it just swerved it in that area and came back.
Yeah.
It was an amazing, it caught on fast.
And in 1989, when you have 700 people in the theater and it's that era and you watch that and you don't know what it is. I mean, that crowd dynamic is so great.
Yeah.
It's the perfect breeding ground for shorts like that, or the killing ground, or the killing floor, or the killing moon. I don't know. So it plays in 97 at the Rife Center. She's not in it. Crowd goes nuts. My friend, fucking Republicans. And at that point, Bruce, with the cordless mic in the audience, says those infamous words. He says, okay, that's it. Next year, Gravity Live.
Yeah.
And people cheer, and that's about it. So fast forward to like February of the next year. I am a student at Ohio State at that point, and I know Bruce well enough, and we've gotten to know each other because I did a little bit of behind-the-scenes work on the marathons.
Yeah.
And I stopped by the Wexner Center one day to get something from him. And he says, well, I've drawn up some ideas for Gravity Live. And he shows me the sheet of ideas. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, we'll need this and this and this. We'll need like four or five people. And under the role of Jiminy Gravity, who sings the song about the gravity shortage, he says, maybe I can use my OSU connections and go over to the theater department and get someone who can sing. And that's when I said those ill-fated words. Well, Bruce, you know, I've done a lot of theater. I can sing and dance. I wouldn't mind.
I'm a triple threat.
And that's when
I can also direct.
Believe it or not, yeah, I am a triple threat. Maybe even a quadruple threat. I'm looking for that fourth leg of the table.
Yeah.
So that's when I kind of decided to help shepherd Gravity Live along. The friend who said fucking Republicans, he and I were in theater in high school together, and he was like into tech big time. He went on to go to DePaul and get a degree in theater design and lighting design, and now he's in New York working on like big time lighting design things.
Yeah.
So I told him about it, and he said, oh, yeah, well, I'll get in on this too. So it ended up being him, me, a guy he was working with at a frame store, like for a summer job.
Okay.
Who had this, like, looked like Norman Bates' brother. It was great. He was a really, really funny guy, but we always joked around like he looked like he could be Norman Bates' brother. My friend Rose, who works on the decoration committee and has for a long time. And a girl that worked for me, Maya Frank, who is now known as Maya Sayer, who has gone on to be an actress of some small repute, but notable repute. Yeah, if Maya's listening to this, I don't want her to think I'm insulting me. She'll probably murder me in my sleep. Mm-hmm. She, you might know her if you saw The Ides of March, the George Clooney.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's one of my favorite movies of that year.
There's a scene where Clooney's giving a press conference, and the scene opens on him talking, but you see it's a medium close-up of his staff and the people behind him, and it kind of pans across the screen, and for about 5 seconds her face is right there smack dab in the middle, which made me incredibly proud. I was like, that girl used to work for me. That's great. She played Mary Jane.
I got her started
in
this business.
And we got my old buddy Jack DeVos, who was working at CD 101. We got him to be the narrator live. I went to high school with him too. And we all kind of organized this ragtag production of Gravity Live and said, okay, we'll do it. Well, then we found out that the Drexel had arranged for David Wechter and Michael Nankin to come to Columbus and be there at the Rife Center as the special guest of the event. And they had also arranged for Michelle Stacy, who played Mary Jane, to come in. So
it was very sweet. I talked to her for a while. She was sweet.
No pressure at all. So we're here for this festival in the Midwest where these guys' kind of semi-obscure parody film is a staple, and they're being asked to come in with the girl who played Mary Jane to be feted.
Yeah.
And they come in, and what happened? They actually brought their own personal 16mm print of Gravity in and donated it to the marathon.
That's
where the print came in.
And then film died.
So they showed in. Yeah. They showed it. They showed it. Actually, that was, I think, the last year of the 16 print played. No, there was one more year. I take that back. So they showed it, and Wechter and Nankin and Michelle Stacy talked. And then shortly after, we put on our production of Gravity Live. Now, at that year at the 98 Sci-Fi Marathon at the Rife Center, Honk, Wail, and Moan, local jazz trio, were playing a live score to the 1925 version of The Lost World.
I remember that.
And they agreed to play along with us. Mm-hmm. Now, it was kind of fitting with the ragtag aspect of it that we didn't really know what they'd be playing.
Okay.
So they kind of just vamped with some like quasi surf rock standards underneath what we were doing. But it, I mean, it worked out fine. It was okay. We literally got one run through with the sound test, which was 10 minutes before the doors opened for the marathon. Tons of fun. Mm-hmm. But we did it, and there's a tape that exists of it, and it climaxes with me bursting out from behind a life-size drawing of Jiminy Gravity, playing Jiminy Gravity, and singing the Gravity Shortage song. And I always joke around that my costume is strange because the bald cap I had on was not a expensive bald cap. Hence, it looks like I have a condom on my head. It's got this little nub on the top that's just rippled up just a bit. But people seem
so to... it wasn't filled with spermicide up there or anything like that?
I hope not.
That was not. That was not very responsible.
I blocked that out if there. If it was. But we had some like interesting little...
Practice safe gravity, please.
Please out there. Yeah. Some of you are listening and contemplate. Some of you out there are probably listening, and you've made it a ritual now to put the old podcast on, and then, you know, it's like the Barry White of your sex life.
That's
please,
right.
Please practice safe gravity. And to your significant other, leave, really. If someone is using these podcasts to try to turn you on, I don't know what's wrong with them.
It's probably these people who got married over a Serbian
They're
film.
Probably saying, those guys have such sexy voices.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we did that. And
I've heard that said about you.
You told me that. Yes. Yeah. I'm very big in a very limited way in that community, aren't
I? You and I fit certain niches. So
we do, yeah. I haven't exploited that yet for money, but... I'm still young. So
I'm still working on my beefcake calendar.
Oh, yeah, the beefcake calendar. That's right. We had some riffs on gravity due to the fact that we're live and we couldn't do everything we had. We tried. Okay, the big idea we had, many people might not know this, but Bruce's original idea was to get a young co-ed who'd be willing to go topless to play Big Sister. And I think... According to him, we even got this approved with the Capitol Theater, with the Rife Center, because it was touch and go, because we thought, well, can we get away with that? Which is weird when you think about it, because you can get away with showing movies that have nudity, but if someone flashes...
It's a live show.
If someone flashes their mammaries...
Tits.
You know, that term is so
knockers,
base.
Hooters,
yeah, can we just say...
fun bags.
Fun bags. There we go.
Shmoo patties.
Fun...
I miss Shmoo Patties so much.
Fun Bags is...
I was showing...
Fun Bags, I think, is the most truly basest derogatory term.
It is. Isn't it terrible?
It's just like inanimate things that you stick on.
I showed my son Ben Night of the Creeps this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And we're goofing around with it. And there's a scene where they pan across and their girls are getting ready for prom, home, whatever the hell it was for. They're formal or whatever because it's college. And there's a couple boob shots and one of the girls says Shmoo Patties.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben didn't get it because now you never see those nowadays because it's everyone's, if you go tanning, you gotta, and he's like, why are they? And I'm like, oh, Shmoo Patties were awesome. I miss Shmoo Patties.
And Ben is, Ben, by the way, has left the room smartly today.
Ben was confused. Okay.
So he was trying to get someone like that. And I guess, I think Jack
just didn't go down the road to the Silver Fox and brought in a girl.
As far as I remember, I think Jack DeVos told me he had a friend or an associate who was a stripper.
I have a client.
Yeah. I think Jack had said he was looking into getting someone he knew who was a stripper, not Andy Mann, God rest his soul. Although that would have been fun. I would have probably paid extra to be in the cast if we had Andy Mann Davis stripping in front of the crowd.
Andy would have loved to do that.
Yeah.
He probably could have asked him. He would have done it.
Wait, I should have. God damn it.
Now we want to go back in time.
Could have gone back in time for that. So Jack, I think, said he could have possibly gotten someone, but that was touch and go. So we came up with an alternate idea, and this is very appropriate considering one of the trailers we'll talk about hopefully soon. as the people in the listening audience are like, let's go.
This is the gravity. This is longer than the movie.
It is. So the adjustment we made was... My friend, the fucking Republican's friend, he's going to be known as that from now on. My friend Josh, I'll give him a name. In death, he has a name. Josh.
Joff FR.
His name is Josh fucking Republicans.
Josh FR.
His name is Josh fucking Republicans. Josh decided to spin it around, and instead of having Big Sister getting it from the boyfriend, we had Josh, we wheeled him out on what looked like a bed, but I think he was on a chair. And he, all credit to him, he thought of some of these little subtle touches to it that really made it work. We wheeled him out. He had a blanket over his lap, and he had two legs, what looked like two women's legs. It was so rudimentary. It was like two metal poles with pantyhose stuffed with newspaper and then high heel red.
He just had those lying around. Yeah, no, then, really, well, seriously. I don't use them for, I use them for science.
I think he was living with his mom at the time.
Of course.
He was like home from college for the summer. Yeah.
This doesn't make it sound any better.
No.
No, it doesn't.
And he had high heel red shoes on the end. And they were the legs of who Big Sister would have been. And he, timely, because it's 1998, he had a Bill Clinton mask on. And all of a sudden, Big Sister was busy. And we flipped it that Big Sister was giving it to Bill Clinton. And he had such great comic timing because he has no shirt on. And then Jack, as the narrator, says, but her Big Sister was too busy. And at that point, Hunk Waylon Moan improvised a little wah, wah. and Josh improvises. He lifts up the sheet to look under the sheet for a second, turns to the audience and gives a Clinton thumbs up. And it was beautiful. And it was like, wow, this is awesome. So we had that, and we had, we literally had a couple people with a fishing pole. When the scientists were doing we're doing research into the gravity shortage. We had someone with a fishing pole, like, pick something up and take it away from the scientist and made it look really hokey. And
I remember
other things too, but I mean, it was fairly faithful to what goes on.
I remember Gravity Live, and it was very much like a shadow cast for Rocky.
That's a very good way to put it.
It was done in that way. And what was so cool about it was, and I'll have to say, there was a lot of discussion among at least me with people I knew what was going to happen with Big Sister, because that is, of course, the iconic marathon moment.
Yeah.
And you guys did it right, because it was a good enough joke.
Yeah.
That it didn't just play as being dumb.
Now, Bruce, his original idea too was, if we can't get someone to appear nude, maybe we can have someone play Big Sister. And then at the end, during the curtain call, flash her fun bags at the audience, and that'll be it. At the end, then he had another idea.
See, too bad I didn't know you well enough. I would have done it.
Oh, that would have been fun. Yeah.
See, look, I can take off my shirt here.
You hadn't reached your prime yet. No. You were still in the prepubescent stage at that point. Today,
I was still trying to be taken
today,
seriously.
Hey, yeah. Yeah, that's how far we've fallen as a marathon. We were contemplating attractive woman flashing in 1998, and today we're settling for you taking your shirt off during a costume contest.
Yes.
Whew, my. So Bruce's idea, and this isn't bagging on him, but he, as a last-ditch effort, thought, okay, we'll do the thing, we'll have them take the curtain call, and then we'll ask if Big Sister's in the crowd tonight, maybe thinking that some enterprising young lady would get up and flash the crowd.
Well, that would make a new contest.
Yeah. Well, and I think maybe he thought that could happen because, let's see, this was 1998. In 1996 at the Rife Center.
Was he drunk at the time? Because this could get ugly fast.
He's actually suffering from dementia, and that's my big announcement today.
Please
come to the marathon, because Bruce has been diagnosed with dementia, and I actually have been diagnosed with dementia too, and this might be the last marathon we each appear at, because we're both going nuts.
Not after this podcast.
Yeah, I've always joked with him that we should say one of us is dying. And imply, like,
at the end of it, go, I made it!
Yeah, like, this might be our last marathon.
Be wheeled out.
I also told him that at some point he should threaten to retire, and we should promote it as, hey, come on, come on, this is his last marathon.
Bruce's Cher farewell tour.
And at the end, we can do the Peter Pan as a play moment, and I can say, come on, everybody, he said he's going to leave, but we can't let him leave. If all of you believe hard enough, he'll stay, and then he could say, okay, I'll stay. And
are you
going
to get a little
laser
pointer to play him?
It would, yeah.
And get the kids to clap, and he flies around?
It would be a new low in shamelessness.
Oh,
but,
my Lord.
Well, so he had that idea, and I think it was inspired because in 1996, at the first Rife Center marathon, we had an alien mating call contest, and there was a fairly fetching young lady who got up and opened up her shirt, and she had a brassiere on underneath, and said, this is my drunk sorority girl mating call And I think she placed fairly high in it. And I think he kind of thought, oh, well, I'm making this sound like the marathons of old with the Wild West. Like, oh, man, anything goes. Man. Now, today we're really conservative. But let me tell you, back then, you never knew what was going to happen. You might
there
just
was sex in the aisle there and were drugs on the counter.
Well, they did. I remember.
They had sushi on hookers. It was the 90s.
People did used to lay down in the aisles of the Drexel North. I remember
well, the Drexel North, not just the aisles. There was a whole area. There was looked like a homeless.
I remember at the first sci-fi marathon I went to in '93.
There was more room there.
Well, they did, and they played The Abyss, the director's cut.
Yeah. Okay.
And I remember I sat on the aisle, and I remember looking over at one point during the film, and the aisle for like 6-7 rows back is blocked because there are people laying down in the aisles at that point. I remember in the horror marathon that fall, they had some signs up, and it said things like "No laying down in the aisles," and then finally it had. Josh, my buddy, our favorite one that we would joke around about. Yeah, where it said, no boffing in the aisles, which we thought was amazingly funny back in the day.
Nice.
We'd never heard the term boffing before. Boffing has a certain elan to it, you know. It's
boffing's an older term now.
Boffing.
Boffing.
Yeah. Now the marathon crowd is too tired to even contemplate boffing in the aisles.
Yeah.
So anyway, we did that. We did Gravity Live, and it was fun. It was. It came off fairly well. Now, it was... I always look back with a certain amount of minor regret and minor by, oh, I want my cake and eat it too aspect because that was...
You wish you had been boffing in the aisles during the... I will admit, I never went in the aisles, but I did fool around a little bit in my college days.
I didn't need to know that.
Yeah, it happened.
But thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
We just
thank
kept it
you,
our seat.
Thank you, Jimmy Kimmel.
I brought that down fast.
Hey, this is my story.
I was younger and better.
Does the
in shape,
podcast say stories about Kevin's youth? No.
No.
No, thank you. Let's remember who the Jiminy Gravity. The Star Trek. Yeah, Jiminy Gravity, me.
When are we getting a Jiminy Gravity revisitation?
Well, that was the postscript.
You should be Bruce, costume costumes.
Bruce proposed immediately after. He said, our idea was let's do it faithful for the first year, but we keep bringing this back, and we'll do it like... we'll do David Lynch's Gravity or William Shakespeare's Gravity or theme it. And I think we had an idea for a short period, like,
so
wow, that would be
work.
That would be really... Yeah, but I think we thought, wow, that could be cool, but we have never reprised Gravity Live. I joked around that at some point, if we ever did it again, I'd come back as Jiminy Gravity, only if I could have a 5 o'clock shadow and a cigar and say, hey, I'm Jiminy Gravity.
I'm
back.
Jiminy Gravity. What I got my condom head here.
What do you want?
That's what you should just get like a rubber glove and put it on your head.
Like Howie Mandel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Howie Mandel is Jiminy Gravity.
I'll play Big Sister.
Yeah. Ooh, hey. This is getting a little homoerotic for my taste, so.
And it'll be David Lynch's Gravity, and I'll be the Baron Harkonnen version.
I had some good ideas for David Lynch's Gravity, and I forget what they were, but. So
what other shorts are we going to talk about?
Wait.
Oh, my God, there's more.
Yeah, there's more.
This is like watching a Blu-ray.
Well, yeah, this is a good story. My minor regret was. The Monday after that marathon in 1998, I was scheduled to start managing the Drexel in Grandview when they still had that theater. And my weekend went like Friday was my last day at Studio 35 till I came back about a year later.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, Sunday is the marathon. Monday, I start managing the Grandview. So I wanted to kind of enjoy the marathon as it was. Yeah. But let's see, we watched... part of the first film, Rocket Ship XM, but then we had to go backstage and get ready for Gravity Live. So we missed most of Mars Attacks. We did Gravity Live. Then during The Lost World with live music, we were out in the lobby because Wector Nankin and Michelle Stacy were out there signing autographs, and we took pictures with them, and they talked to some of the fans. And then we had to go back and get out of costume. That's when... David Wechter and Michael Nankin say, we would love to take you guys out for drinks. Now, here's where you can see where my priorities really are. Because my first thought was, not to them, but I'm thinking, I don't want to do that because I'll miss Inframan. Because they were showing Inframan, and I had never seen Inframan before. And I was like, I want to see Inframan.
That's amazing.
Come on. So I'm legitimately like talking with my friends saying, I don't know if I want to go out or not. And they're like, dude, you have to go out. They're the guests. They asked you to go out for drinks with them. So finally I said,
but I don't want
to. All right, fine. We'll go out. So I saw like the first 10 minutes of Inframan and then had to leave and ended up not seeing it till the next year at the Boston Sci-Fi. We go out for drinks with Wechter, Nankin, and Michelle Stacy. And they were very, very nice. But there were a couple oddball things. One, Michelle Stacy's husband was with her too, and he was a nice guy. Mm-hmm. But as Josh put it to me after we left, he said, I said, yeah, that was nice, but it was a little weird. He says, well, yeah, they're like in their 40s and we're teenagers, essentially. We don't have anything in common. What are we going to talk about? Pat? I mean, because that was our conversation, ended up being like, so you guys do this a lot, yeah? And just us all smiling at each other and like, okay, the second thing was Michelle Stacy smiled the whole time. And I'm going to pay her a tribute here. By the way, I can't believe I'm not saying this. Most of you in the listening audience do know who Michelle Stacy is because she was the little girl in Airplane who said, I like my coffee like I like, or like I like my men like I like coffee, right?
I like my coffee black like my men.
Yes, yeah. That was her.
That's how she introduced herself.
Yes.
Because it'd be like, oh, you were in shoes. Yes, Airplane black like my men. That's how she how she talk.
She, I'll give her credit. She smiled the whole time we were in the restaurant. And I never once thought she's being fake. She managed to pull off a frozen rictus grin the whole time and made it seem completely authentic. And it was like, this is who she is. But it was strange. The more I thought about it, like, I can't believe she's still smiling. This is strange. Like, I could never do this if I tried. So we leave after that.
And you only see that knowing celebrities and having dealt with celebrities, you only see that constant look for people who've been doing it for so long. And it's not like she didn't have this huge career that she'd been doing junkets for years.
She had a nice smile too. She had a nice set of teeth. Yeah. And she did. I wish I could have teeth like that. And I consider my teeth to be at least
hello, Deliverance.
My dentist likes my teeth, but she had very, very nice teeth. So it was just, it was odd. The whole,
sounds like you're choosing a horse. Yeah. Like, oh, that's a good set of teeth there.
Still, so Michelle Stacy, let me tell you, man, that's some quality teeth.
How fast does she run a mile?
She was very fast too, believe it or not. Yeah. As we're leaving the restaurant that night, we turn around and she's just like zooming away. It was amazing. So we leave, and then the next movie that we're showing at the marathon after I missed Inframan was Space Truckers, Stuart Gordon's film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to make it back to see Space Truckers. But Josh and Rose, my two friends, they want me, and I'm driving, by the way, they want me to drive them to Wendy's to get something to eat. I'm like, I want to make it back to Space Truckers. They're like, look, we want to get something to eat. So I said, fine, we'll go back. So I take him to Wendy's, and then we get back to the marathon, and Space Truckers is like 3/4 of the way through. I'm annoyed at this point because it's like, wait a minute. Yeah, but I mean, just the fact of, especially in those days, seeing the premiere of a film by a guy whose films you like and who is generally well-regarded, our old buddy, Stuart Gordon.
Yes.
I'm just annoyed because now I've missed half of the first part of the marathon with gravity stuff, and it's like, I didn't think it would be this much. That was my fear back then when I thought, oh, if I ever organize a horror marathon, my great fear was I couldn't do that. I would never be able not to watch the movies.
Yeah.
Now we've finally finagled it over the years where Bruce and I can just sit and watch the whole thing essentially, and it's the theater runs itself. It's no big deal.
I would imagine that if you were doing Jiminy Gravity and like Bruce Campbell was the guest, he wouldn't be like, no, I need to go out to dinner with Jiminy Gravity. Yeah. We need to get out to dinner next.
Trust me, that's one of my concerns about bringing a big guest in, is I think that would be fun, but I want to watch the movies, too. I don't want us to spend the whole time being
As the organizer, you'd have to show up.
Well, yeah, Stuart Gordon.
Not as Jiminy Gravity. Yeah. You should show up as Jiminy Gravity.
When Stuart Gordon showed up the last time in 2009.
Showed up. When he showed up. He just wandered in.
We're doing the marathon.
There's a marathon here today.
Doing the marathon. I'm like, oh my God, it's Stuart Gordon. What are you doing? He's like, I'm in the area. I thought I'd stop by. Looky here.
Like one of those old old Christmas specials on
it is.
TV.
Yeah, we should. Next
it's
time.
Joyce DeWitt. Like,
hey, everybody. What? Look who's here. Stuart Gordon. Wow.
Yeah, how you should run the marathons. Yeah.
Anyway, well, so that was Gravity Live. That was the whole epic story around that. And the ironic part of it, or maybe the stupid part of it, is Wechter and Nankin donate their personal print, 16mm, uncut. The next year, the marathon moves to the continent. It plays, because I think they set up a portable 16 projector in the back.
Yeah.
But that's the last time it plays on 16mm in marathon history. And after that, it actually, the screening history has been intermittent, sadly, because that's something that should play all the time.
Yeah.
But because of various other factors, things had. Now, this year, finally, we got a good copy of it, a good digital copy, and hopefully it'll be back to a regular thing. Although, again, the weird thing, and this will lead into the next marathon short we talk about, the weird thing about Gravity, my transitions are just, it's like, next up, we will be transitioning into this part, so wait around for it. Yeah,
who was that?
I don't know. That's
is that Werner Herzog?
Stern,
when he's been drunk?
Stern Teutonic professor. I don't know. I've seen too many things
you're
in my
wiped
life.
Wiped out. Okay.
I'm dying. I have nothing here. The weird thing about gravity, as is with the next short, is that back in the day, a lot of people would clap along and sing to the mm-hmm. Jiminy Gravity song.
Yeah.
This past marathon, a few people sang, and like 7 or 8 of us would clap, and then it just died out, and it was almost like, oh, everybody's too tired to
We've
clap.
Gotten
like,
old.
Come on, it's clapping along. This is part of the fun. We've people, this is me speaking to you, the marathon audience. Clap. Come on. It's supposed to be fun. We're here for 24 hours, like forgetting about the bullshit of our lives. Let's have some fun and clap. It's not that hard.
You're right. It does wind down. No,
great. Now at the next marathon, I'm going to get a whole group of people going, man, you turned into a dick. What happened?
Happened, Jimmy.
Are you going to call us out? We pay the money. We can do whatever we want to. We don't have to clap like we're trained monkeys, okay? Jimmy Kimmel. Yeah. Now, that leads me into the next short. And to me, the next short is kind of the marathon short because it's a series of shorts, and that's the Night of the Living Bread.
Yes.
Films.
Again, I was there when it premiered.
That was 1989 or 90, I think, right?
It was somewhere around that. It was.
By
it was still the Drexel North, big deal.
Our buddy, the great Kevin S. O'Brien, currently residing in beautiful Australia, but always threatening to come back and relocate.
Well, he used to keep the official body count, too.
Kevin O'Brien did keep the official body count.
And he was really good, because then other people tried to keep body counts, and then when you got like worlds blowing up and universes ending.
See, I love that. That to me is, those are the body counts I loved when you
He
count,
was good at that. Then other people would just be like, everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the last couple of years I've appointed a couple of friends of mine to be the body counters. And it took me trying to prompt them to have other things like toasters or dogs or worlds, things like that. But Kevin was the first.
Yeah, how do you do like the Quiet Earth? Everybody except those three and probably a couple others.
Yeah. Well, and I think the fun thing about a body...
And they died too. So.
Well, but we never kept... There was really never... Oh, I shouldn't say never. There was almost always a body counter at the horror marathon, and that was Kevin.
Yeah.
And sci-fi, you would have people volunteer now and again, but there's only been a few times, I think. In fact, once someone asked Kevin, hey, are you going to do the body count? And he said, I only do horror.
Yeah.
So there you go for him.
Grump.
He is. Well, he is. Yeah, yeah. Most people who know him know that. But he's very lovable in his curmudgeonly self.
In his grumpy self. Yeah.
So Kevin S. O'Brien is a film student at OU, makes this short student film. It's a parody. If you've never seen it, again, if you haven't, you're living not only under a rock, you're living under a rock under a rock.
Yeah.
You're living inside the earth. It's a short parody version of Night of the Living Dead, but instead of being attacked by zombies, the people are attacked by pieces of white bread. And that's the whole gimmick. And it's, again, short enough that it's fairly clever and fun. And, okay, you can tell me. You can tell me how this worked out. Because when it premiered, would I be correct in saying that it took a year before people started throwing bread? Because they didn't know what it was, right? Yeah.
Well, you know, 1 year they gave out bread.
A couple times they have, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it eventually worked its way up to where Kevin, in trying to sell tapes of the bread movies, would make up bread action figures, which was a piece of bread in a Ziploc bag.
But I think
you get a little card of what the bread was inside of it.
But I think we get those in the little swag bag that they give.
Yeah.
But obviously it didn't happen the first year.
No. But by, I'm guessing, the second year, people got it and they started bringing their own bread too.
Okay.
People think this is weird.
That
now.
That didn't last long though, if I recall.
Yeah. Well, what happened was
I do recall it
premiered in 1990. You're looking 91. People start bringing their own, and it would start playing at both marathons, even though it's a horror related.
Yeah,
short.
They did it for both. Yeah.
And people would start bringing their own bread, and people would bring like a couple loaves, go to the store and buy day-old bread and bring the stuff. And if you see video footage, which we have, and you can't see it because this is an audio format, ha-ha.
Sucker.
Woof. There's video footage back from, like, 1991 and 92 of Night of the Living Bread playing, and it's video footage shot from the back of the theater. So you see the screen and darkness, and you see the silhouette of bread flying around the theater. It's like a storm of bread. It is just amazing how it's all over the place, flying through the air nonstop. And you know,
used to just be able to then pick it up off the ground and fling it again.
Oh, yeah. And again, like when I first started going and we had no idea that they did this.
Yeah.
This was one of those holy shit moments where you think, oh my God, I'm home. Because, wow, no way. People do this? This is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
So people would do that. I admittedly was one of the cruel ones who used to pick up a piece of bread and crumple it up and peg people with it. They also had the whole controversy about don't throw bread at the screen.
Yeah.
I think I may have done that once, but I was much younger and stupider. I would never do that now.
No.
And that kept on going.
Well, the problem was is then it would show up because people they'd start the marathon and ping, you'd see one go flying early.
Yeah. And there were,
but see, this was also at the time when Rocky Horror was still playing in Columbus.
Yes.
So you had that whole mentality of throwing rice.
Well, that was the definite father/mother of the bread phenomenon. Now, on a personal note, my earliest marathon memories, I often have these Proustian sense memories of not being able to breathe through my nose after about 3 a.m. because I have allergies. And by the time that time of the morning rolled around, you'd get bread that was molding all over the theater.
Yeah.
And I'm
it was nasty. Oh, well, because it would soak up all the soda that would spill. And,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, the floor of a movie theater is nasty enough, but just after a bit. 24 hours.
And there's pieces of bread hanging all over the place. But it also kind of added to the funk of the charming funk. I don't know. In some ways, I'd rather have aging bread than people who don't wash.
Yeah.
You know, at least one has kind of a unique scent to it. So this continues for a couple years until finally we get to the second schlock around the clock all night marathon in February of 1994. And at that marathon, which only had like 50 to 60 people at it, at the old Drexel North.
That was not the year they played the Pretty Peaches trailer.
No, I missed on that one. That was the first schlock around the clock. First schlock around the clock, not to be confused, by the way, with Shock Around the Clock, our current masterpiece of terror. Schlock Around the Clock 1991 happened like in August, I think. That was when they played the infamous Pretty Peaches trailer, which, if those of you who don't know it, is for a adult film. And it features footage of an enema, right?
Yeah. Well, and what's funny, I'll tell you, for some... I don't even want to explain why, but for whatever reason, I was thinking about that one day, not too long ago. And I'm like, did I really see that? And so then I looked it up, and on Wikipedia it talks about that infamous scene.
Yeah.
And apparently that had been edited out of a lot of release because this is back when you actually had dirty movie houses.
Right? Yeah.
You couldn't just go see it on videotape. And they had cut that out of some prints. It was that controversial. Wow. But if you search, you can actually find that clip online. And it's kind of amazing to watch even today.
Almost everybody who talks about the first schlock around the clock mentions Pretty Peaches off the bat.
It was
just a trailer, but it was probably the most extreme moment of the night.
Well, it was played before, because I remember Bruce got up there and he goes, no, obviously we're talking about a short that's never going to be played again at the marathon.
Cafe Flesh played in 2005, remember? Yeah, the trailer.
But they showed, Bruce got up and he said, somebody gave me this trailer, they wanted me to play it, it's an adult film, it's a trailer for that, I'll show it before Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS.
Yeah.
Which was a movie that offended a lot of people and got people to walk out. Which is an X-rated movie, but it's not an XXX-rated movie. Ilsa is a movie that was a legitimate movie that's very offensive that got an X rating. Pretty Peaches is an XX. I didn't even submit it to anybody. So watching the trailer and doing all this stuff, and it's the middle of an enema. And of course, this is back in the days of Furkinis and everything. There's no waxing going on. And all of a sudden, she's like, I'm doing this. And you see the anime happening. And people are kind of rumbling because it's that discomfort you feel of being around other people while there's this porno trailer playing. And then all of a sudden, dead silence in the theater. Just dead silence. And it's just, and it goes on forever.
That's beautiful.
It was an amazing experience. I was like 19 and I was just like, I don't even know. This is before the internet. You could Google enemas and find plenty of cool stuff.
See, kids, how much better life was before the internet. Now you know everything and it's terrible.
Now if you wanted to see a 70s porno lady do an enema, You can do that in privacy of your own home. You had to go see it in a big group with 700 of your closest friends.
Back then, when those things were mysterious, you thought, man, the world is filled with mysteries and strange things. And now that you have the internet, you realize, wow, the world's awful. And those the secrets are just disappointing.
That's what that giant red water bottle's for.
Great.
My grandmother has one of those.
Oh.
It's for heating things.
I'm deeply disappointed. So yes, at the second schlock around the clock, February 1994, which was far less successful than the first one, even though the lineup was still good, Bruce makes the announcement that to this fairly small crowd, makes the announcement that... Are you looking for the lineup to schlock number two?
Yeah, I got it up
the
here.
The lineup for Schlock Around the Clock number two is High School Confidential,
yes.
John Waters Polyester with a limited amount of Smell-O-Vision or Odorama cards. I have one of those. I won one of those because the...
What was the smelly sock? Number five or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. Bruce was giving them out to a limited number of people in the crowd, and he said, if you have a t-shirt from a past marathon, or if you have a Schlock Around the Clock t-shirt on, come up and you can get one. Because they made t-shirts for the first one. Yeah. I, being the fanboy I was, I had called the theater weeks before Schlock Around the Clock 2, and I said, will there be t-shirts? And they said, no. So I made my own t-shirt, which was a white t-shirt, and I colored marker on it and had some goofy stuff about what you could do. And so I won one because I'm just that geeky.
The last movie to release an Odorama or something similar was Spy Kids 4.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
I
right.
saw that. In
Forgot about that. So High School Confidential, John Waters Polyester with limited Odorama, Switchblade Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Hercules Unchained, which Returns. Was a premiere. Inframan was supposed to show, but it didn't show up, and so they showed Shakes the Clown instead. And then Jonathan Demme's Caged Heat, which is, I was a little wonky and tired during that marathon, too, but that was a pretty good lineup. So anyway, he announces, like, after the second film, he says, well, we have a big announcement. The cleaning costs for some of the marathons are starting to get a little... high.
Yeah.
I had a good word, but I couldn't think of it. So
extravagant.
We are officially outlawing the throwing of bread during Night of the Living Bread.
Yeah.
And then right afterwards, they showed Night of the Living Bread. And I remember me being the young whippersnapper that I was, who thought I was hilarious, like 2 or 3 minutes in, as no one's throwing bread, I said quite loudly, wow, this sucks without the bread. And my friend Josh, I think, said, no, don't say that. Kevin O'Brien might be here. And so you had a couple years where no one threw bread.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was fun. And the weird thing is, I think the movies, and by that time you had Night of the Living Bread. You had Loaf, which was the parody of the Alien trailer, fill in the blanks. You had another bread film, which you should just see. It, explaining it takes away the whole joke.
Yeah.
You had those three films. And still had a decent amount of audience participation in them, too. But, and they're clever and they're interesting, but for a couple of years, it took quite a bit out of the experience when you couldn't just throw bread. So eventually when we...
Obviously we went to the horror never went to the Rice Center.
No, no. When we brought the horror marathon, when I resurrected the horror marathon at Studio 35, in 2001, I pitched the idea that we should bring back, throwing of bread.
Bread-o-rama.
Yeah. And we gave everybody, I think,
you could call it Yeast-O-Rama.
Yeah.
That would sound so great. And then you could show the Pretty Peaches trailer.
I forget what we did that year. Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be great. I forget in 2001 if we gave people bread or if maybe I went out and bought a bunch of bread and kind of distributed it to the crowd. We didn't. Yeah. Kevin wasn't there, and Kevin didn't give away his own bread action figures. But we did have it, and, you know, it was weird. It was like people getting back into the game after being retired for a while because they were tentative and like, oh, should we throw some stuff or whatever? But it was still fun. And then a couple years later in 2003, we had the world premiere of Sandwich, the legendary fourth bread film, which again, I won't give away because it's kind of a one joke film, but it's worth checking out if you see it. We had that and we had this big ceremony for it. And Kevin came dressed in a tuxedo and sat through the entire event in a tuxedo, and George Romero was there as a special guest, so there was kind of a closing of the great Universal doorway or circle in that sense. Kevin did a Q&A. We brought back cast members from Night of the Living Bread, and we showed the bread films before, and we do have tape footage of this, and some people threw bread, but man, the reactions to Night of the Living Bread, it's like, it's awesome. And we had 350 people there, so that's part of it. Over the years, again, the crowd has kind of become a little tamer. And so now when we do show it, it's like, oh, yay, bread, it's great. But back then it was like a genuine phenomenon. And it was great. And
yeah,
I don't want this to turn into like, man, back in the day it was awesome and now it sucks.
Well, but also I also don't want to encourage people to be bringing bread to the Drexel.
No, I don't know if we've ever had that conversation with them about.
Well, but here's the other thing is the Drexel, the main Drexel, which is just the Drexel.
The Drexel.
It's the theater doesn't work. When it was the Drexel North, it was such a long, it wasn't just throwing the bread. It was seeing how far you can throw the bread.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because you're aware of the shape of bread, it's flat. And you can fling it like a frisbee.
Yeah.
Or fling it forward like a lawn dart, you know? So it was kind of that was part of the thing, and bring it to a different theater, making it so small. I don't think I could go to a Rocky Horror show anywhere but the old Graceland Theater, which doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And throw rice.
I think I ate a chunk out of one of those pieces of bread at one of the studio marathons, maybe.
What's your problem?
I was a dare. It was kind of like, you know, I picked one up.
Was this like during the beginning, or was it like at 6 o'clock the next
morning? It was like 6 o'clock the next morning. I think there was a piece hanging from the stage, and I said, oh, does anyone have this? And someone said, eat it, eat it. So I took a bite and anything.
I'd do anything that I was in front of a stage.
Anything for my adoring crowd, baby. Let me tell you, those people, the little people out there, as I like to call them, the peons, I will do anything for them. All right. So we need to roll through the rest of these in short order, because we've spent so much time talking about Jimmy fucking Fallon
and Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel. Okay, there's I count this one in the pantheon, even though it has not had the reception I think that it should warrant, and that's Space Boy, which is
a tough sell. Yeah,
yeah, and
I love Space Boy.
I do too.
It's
and
so out there.
And when I first saw it at a trailer-thon, I thought this is going to be the next great marathon short. Mm. And people, we actually had like three people walk out of Space Boy during Sci-Fi this year.
Really?
I had to run out to the lobby to get something, and they said, we'll go back in as soon as Space Boy's over. Like, they thought it was just, I don't know what they thought it was. It's just Space Boy. It's,
well, part, you know what it is? Space Boy, if I were to say what causes a problem with the marathon crowd, is it is one, it's one thing. It's this wacky thing.
Yeah.
And once you're about a minute in, you get it. But then there's another like 8 minutes of it.
I guess, yeah. But it's Space Boy to me is so bizarre that you always kind of wonder where it's going or why this is made. Or it's such a one of a kind deal.
It's so like space middle aged man.
Well, and Space Boy, to my knowledge, is not available on video.
You can't get it online.
The only online is
clip of it online. One version.
One of our
online.
Buddies, one of our marathon buddies,
somebody I know,
taped it off the screen and put it on YouTube. But that's it. So I would always think, oh, the rarity of it sells it. But Space Boy, and then of course you have the remake of Space Boy by our buddy Mike Olenek,
which is online.
Yeah, in which you should see it. I mean, Mike came and presented Space Boy at one of the marathons about 5 years ago.
It's a pretty accurate representation.
It is. It is.
I'll give it to him.
The crowd was kind of hard on him. I felt bad because I thought, well, come on.
Take a movie that people are go lukewarm on at best.
Yeah, but it was like, it's Space Boy. Who cares? You know, the crowd was like, the crowd would ask questions like, why did you do this? Or like, why would you think of remaking a film this bad? And it's like, it kind of turned into this like, why are you an idiot? I was ashamed. I really was. I was like, come on, guys. I mean, and Mike's like a really good guy and very funny in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible. Funny in a lot of ways. Okay, other shorts. Other shorts that have played that I could think of. Gay and Wilson's Diner, which actually played at Sci-Fi this year.
That's very cool. That's
before
cool
Delicatessen. The film, it's actually pulled up on pause on Kevin's TV right now.
Giselle Carasson?
French film. French film, Electric Broomsticks. I don't know if you can hear this.
I don't know.
Here, I'll imitate it if you can't hear it.
Yeah, it's just... excuse.
Yeah, which has played sporadically, but I think is a really fun...
It's so out there.
Our buddy Jim Turner from Chicago had a student film called Meat about a guy who works for a butcher, I think it is, and kind of becomes obsessed with... with the blood. Oh, someone's here. Wait, who is it? It's Ben's back.
He heard Giselle Carson. He wanted to see it.
We showed Meat because it was on 16mm. We showed it a few times at studio.
Yeah.
We haven't showed it since because I don't know that he has a video copy. Here's one that Bruce showed years ago and only showed once, and the crowd didn't get into it that much, and I was disappointed. And that was the classic informational film, UFO Fact or Fiction, which I quite enjoyed. But yeah, that's been like 10 years ago, that show. Yeah. He should bring that back. Okay, here's a couple that by the way, we're running out of time, so that's why I'm zooming through these right now.
We don't have the rich history of, Diner Live.
Two that I always thought would be fun to show if you could ever get a decent copy of them. And right now, I think they only exist on YouTube in like 360p.
Ugh.
Number one, and they both gained fame by showing on USA's Up All Night years ago. One is the name of it Mousetrap? It's with Richard O'Brien.
I don't know.
Richard O'Brien from Rocky Horror fame, starring as a man who's creating a giant mousetrap in his basement, and that's, I'll leave it at that.
Huh.
But the one that I would love to see, and I have referred to this many times, this film scared the piss out of me when I was a kid. I'm watching USA on a Saturday afternoon, and they showed Mannequin, the Andrew McCarthy, Kim Cattrall movie.
Yeah.
And USA had a couple minutes to fill in the time slot after that. And so they showed one of the Up All Night shorts. This is at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, called Living Dolls. And Living Dolls petrified me. In fact, a couple years ago when I found it on YouTube, I watched it in the middle of the night with headphones on the computer, and it just creeped me out. Living Dolls is about this guy who... is it called Living Dolls? I think it's called Living Dolls. A mild-mannered, meek guy who works in a bridal shop, and there are mannequins who they have in the attic that they have the bridal stuff on, and he starts to hear them speak to him.
Okay.
And there's a little more after that. It's a fairly simple concept, but in a very lo-fi way, it's really, really creepy and was traumatic to me as a child.
I always found the shorts when there were... And I always enjoyed having the shorts, and I would show... When I do my own little marathons with my kids... I always put these shorts in too, whenever I can.
Yeah.
And I always enjoy them. I think they're fun to do just because they're something different you don't always see. You see, shorts have had a bit of a resurgence now that you've got YouTube and the availability of YouTube and Vimeo. But there's a lot of noise out there to find the really good ones.
There is.
There was one you showed. What was the one? A bunch of people in a campfire. And it was a takeoff on killers, a psycho killer around a campfire, showed a couple years ago at a horror one. I'm trying to remember the name of it too.
God, I'm thinking of another trailer that's like that, but it's an old drive-in intermission.
No, it was something that was made like
psycho
4 or 5 years ago.
Killers around it.
Like people around a campfire, and there's a psycho killer in the woods, and then he comes and he starts killing everybody.
I forget what it was, but.
Yeah, it was. I just thought of it now.
The one I love, the trailer I love that reminded me of that was the old. It's Toccata in the Fugue in D minor.
Mm.
For those of you who don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Because I obviously sound like I do.
Box
right. It's that, and it's the music starts, and there's an image of a candle in the dark, and all of a sudden you see these really dark, creepy, almost cannibal-like faces, and then you see that they're picking over something and about to eat it, and then when you finally see it, it's a big pizza. And then they do a big song and dance number where they say, oh, we've got pizza, we've got movies, we got burgers too. And come to the snack bar, come to the snack bar, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's kind of one of the all-time famous lost snack bar shorts that you'll see once in a while. And it's played at marathons here and there over the years.
You know what you should try? There's one called Nightmare of the Snack Bar. Have you ever seen that? It's on YouTube.
I don't know if I have.
And it's on a high resolution, so you might be able to get a version of that. I'll have to show that to you sometime because it's a really neat... It's basically let's all go to the lobby in the darkest universe version of it.
That would be cool.
The darkest timeline version of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's some cool stuff.
Trailers, because I thought we'd need to fill time, which obviously we filled that time by talking about Jimmy Fallon.
Yes.
And Jimmy Kimmel. History of trailers, some highlights.
We could do that on the next one. I think we had an open slot. Why don't we do
Actually,
the trailers?
Actually, no, you're right. Yeah, those are tees. Yeah. So we can pay off on our tees.
Yes.
So the tees is... Tune in next time, and we will talk about the great film critic Andrew Saras, who's dead, once deemed certain types of art as being called, what he called them as termite art.
Okay.
And termite art was art that didn't immediately maybe impress you or didn't immediately sink in, but over time, like, termites would kind of burrow into your consciousness and you'd really, like, you'd have to think about it and it would have a long-term effect.
Yeah.
And I think that possibly one of the great examples of termite art in marathon trailers is the Yogo trailer featuring my hero, Yogurilla. But you'll have to wait till next time to hear about that because we're running slow on time and the giant studio in the sky is descending back to Earth to refuel. And Jimmy Fallon. Oh, look, there's Jimmy Fallon waiting outside the window, and he's got a lynch mob behind him.
Arm laser cannons.
Nice job, Kevin. Happening. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. If you are still with us, make sure you join us at the 666th Annual Horror Movie Marathon, 24 hours,
October 18th and 19th, www.horrormarathon.com.
Tickets on sale when?
Still aiming for probably mid to late August. And hopefully by the next time I talk to you, we'll have some more titles and some more news and some more bad jokes.
Excellent. All right, we will talk to you all later.